Did you miss the headline and the top story of the day?
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Don't worry, because we got you covered.
This is how we do.
It's the Cattles and Rami
Top Spot.
That is the show. Final hour on a Friday going into Memorial Day weekend. Woo-hoo! I'm the Rami half of that. That woo-hoo came from Whitey Gleason in the co-host chair. And for the absent Nick Cattles, Nick will be back on Tuesday after the long weekend.
My weirdness shines through more and more every day.
And it'll be shining through on Tuesday, and we can't wait to get Nick back. We do appreciate Whitey sitting in, though, all week long. I appreciate Jay and Simone and all the snacks they brought in. Last segment, I needed to drink a lot of water after the snack exchange. There's some salt here. Simone brought in some little ice cream cones during the
tiny,
oh my God,
like Barbie doll ice creams. Oh, but they're very good.
I'm with JJ, though. Simone says, like, oh, this will satisfy. She handed it to us. She was like, the best part about this is you don't have to eat a whole cone. It'll satisfy your craving. I'm like, Jay, I'm going in for like four, five, six of those.
Yeah.
If they're in the freezer at home.
Perfect little bite.
They're too easy to eat. Too easy
to
eat.
They were about nipple length.
Yes.
That's how big they are.
In the top spot today, we're talking NBA Finals and Whitey, the Celtics did it again. They pull out the 110-97 victory. Never trailed in that game yesterday. And something kind of odd about that game, Derek White and Marcus Smart led all scores with 24 and 23. It wasn't necessarily the Tatum and Brown show or anything like that. But what it came down to was the Celtics just, they shot the ball well again, which they didn't do in the first three games. 50% from the field, 41% from three. Afterwards, Jaylen Brown continued his mantra of, man, don't let us get going.
Yeah, we just got to be consistent. Tonight we were the tougher playing team. We set this on from start to finish, and we had a great team win. We hit shots, and they let us get two. So don't let us get another one.
Jason Tatum basically said what I just said. He knows they tend to make this thing hard on themselves.
For some odd reason, even last year, we always seem to make it a little bit tougher on ourselves. But what I do know is that, you know, you can see the true character of a person, of a team, when things aren't going well. And our ability to come together, figure things out, you know, when it's not necessarily looking good for us. It's unlike any team I've been on this year and last year, you know, just the core group of guys of, you know, being able to respond. And I think that's just a test to our togetherness, you know, obviously how bad we want it. And, you know, we got room for the determined, tough guys that, you know, push come to shove, you know, you look to the left and the right and you believe that, you know, the guy next to you is going to do whatever it takes and go down fighting if it don't work out.
If I'm a Celtics fan and our resident Celtics fan, Nick Cattles will be back on Tuesday, like, cool that you guys swing when your back's against the wall and you don't just go down dying, but how about that character and that fight and the want to win and all? How about that shows up in games one, two, or three?
Yes. The other thing I'd say, in addition to that, I'd say, you know, you haven't won anything yet. Here you are talking about, you know, the true test of character. Well, you're still losing in the series, and that's great that you've won two games, but how about, hey, we haven't done anything yet. We'll see you in the next game.
But the Heat, Whitey, they look old.
They do.
They looked old in that game yesterday.
And they missed Gabe Vincent.
And they looked like they missed Gabe Vincent in his 17 and a half points a game.
Yes. And so we'll see what his status is for the rest of the series, however far that goes. You know, it's tough. Sprained ankles don't just heal overnight. They really needed him, and they did. You're right. They looked old, and they shot the ball well. Miami did. They just didn't make as many threes, and they turned the ball over way too much.
And Jimmy Butler looked human. He looked pedestrian, really, for the second straight game. 5 of 10. 0 for 2 from 3. He only got to the free throw line 6 times, 14 points on the night. They were minus 24 when Jimmy Butler was out there on the floor. And I said before game 5, Whitey, I said, even if the Celtics take this, I'm still going to say it's 60-40 that Miami wins this series. Jimmy Butler keeps looking like that, that evens the odds a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's closer to 55-45 if I'm looking at this Jimmy Butler for the last two games.
Of course, as you know, as we discussed, as anybody who watched the game knows, they took him out in the fourth quarter, so he would be playing with more energy in the next game, because they have the last two games. Boston took it to the Heat, and they looked old and tired.
And they're doing what a lot of teams did to De'Aaron Fox as the season winded down. We saw the Warriors do it in that playoff series, which is they're gonna run two guys right at him and get the ball out of his hands and see if somebody else can beat you. They mm-hmm. weren't gonna let Jimmy Butler dictate the action and set the offense and get it going and run it all through him. They were running two guys right into Jimmy Butler's face, and he had to get rid of the ball, and they were saying, let somebody else beat us. And especially with Gabe Vincent, that was very hard for the Miami Heat to do yesterday. I don't know about you, Whitey. Well, I do know, because we discussed it earlier. That's kind of the concept of mm-hmm. the top spot. But yeah, as far as entertainment value, the guy I just mentioned is the reason why ultimately, well, that and the schadenfreude of taking joy in Celtics fans' pain, including Nick, who will be back on Tuesday. Oh, man, if this thing goes seven and they lose Monday and then Nick is here on Tuesday, oh, it's still going to be so fresh. It's going to be great. But outside of that, the guy I just mentioned, Jimmy Butler, and the way he wears the black hat and just antagonizes the other team and opposing fan bases and just doesn't care about anything, that to me brings the most entertainment value to a potential opponent for the Nuggets out of these two teams. I want the Heat to go on, and I want to see Jimmy Butler with his black hat against Nikola Jokic and everybody's darlings in the Denver Nuggets and the white hat, and give us a good storyline and people to root for and root against in the NBA Finals.
That's where you and I part company. I think Boston is a much better team. I think they're more fun to watch. I think they play a much more exciting brand of basketball. I also fear if Miami finds their way through, tip of the cap to them. But I think Denver, you never know this year, but I think Denver would
just
destroy
Miami. Just going to run
them
out of the gym.
Yeah.
Bam Adebayo has given Nikola Jokic some issues in the past. Now, that means that he's, what, only going to barely get a triple-double when you're talking about that guy? But
well, I thought our guest yesterday, Alphonse, said it was the other way around.
Oh, what? I might be confused.
Yeah.
I might have it flipped in my head. I thought he said Jokic has, or Adebayo has given Jokic problems. Maybe he said the opposite, and I have it flipped in my head. That's quite possible. But I'm a big Jimmy Butler guy, always have been. I would like to see him get another crack at a championship, and like I said, antagonize mm-hmm. the Nuggets and the city of Denver the whole way.
Yeah, he can't do it himself, and last night it looked like, for the most part, you know, Highsmith, Martin played well, but it looks like he's going to have to do it himself.
And they might get, in this series, he will have to do it himself. They might get Tyler Hero back for the
That's
finals,
right.
which I don't think makes him as good a team as Denver, or maybe not even as good as Boston on paper, but it's certainly, it balances the scales a little bit more heading into that series.
They could use him.
Tyler Hero is ready to go. That's our top spot, looking at back at the Eastern Conference Finals, ahead to the NBA Finals a little bit. At 5:30, we'll have the callback, bring you back a little something with someone we talked about earlier in the show. But after this, the 49ers have a secret weapon, and one we haven't talked about yet. We'll discuss next.
Cattles and Rami.
Sactown Sports.
That's the show. Whitey in for Cattles once again this afternoon. Still working on the snacks as we open the Sacramento Snack Exchange at 4:45 here on the Cattles and Whitey program. I think the most surprising and maybe my favorite thing in the little smorgasbord that Simone and Jay hooked up for us, Whitey, was the spicy dried mango. That was a sleeper right there.
So good.
But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
You know, my daughter.
Is that who was? Hold on. Did you bring that, Jay, or did Simone bring that? You brought that.
I brought that. Okay. Yeah, my daughter put me on that. You know, she laced my tennis shoes, gave me up.
Tasty, 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 tasty. We and I appreciate it. Me and Whitey both do appreciate that. There was a piece from NBC Sports Bay Area that made its way to Yahoo, where I checked it out this morning. Whitey talking about what 49ers quarterbacks Brock Purdy and Sam Darnold are learning from Brian Griese.
Brock Purdy.
And just a couple of quotes from the article. This is Darnold saying that Greasy has been awesome so far during OTAs. Really, throughout the whole process, right when I decided to sign here, Greasy has been awesome for me. Just to be able to talk to about learning the system, about coming to a new team, certain expectations coming in and being the new guy on the block. Also, this from Sam Darnold said, it's also having that mindset. Okay, when I step in the huddle, I am the leader. And guys are going to, if they have questions, they should feel confident in me that I know the answer in terms of scheme and what they got. Purdy says, oh yeah, it's been great. Really just picking up where we left off last year. I always say his experience. He's been in our shoes, so he's able to relate to a lot of things, what we're seeing, how we're feeling, situational football, etc. And as I was reading this article, Whitey, we've talked a lot about, and really in a couple of different sports, we've talked in basketball, how teams like the Miami Heat and how the Kings are going to need to be a team that finds talent in unlikely places and develops talent at a high rate and very, very effectively and very efficiently.
It's what the very best organizations have a knack for doing.
It's what the Kings are going to have to do. And I've said a number of times that when it comes to their player evaluation and player development, I give Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch a lot of credit and a lot of leeway and benefit of the doubt. If a move doesn't make sense to me, I go, okay, I might not see it now, but these guys usually see things that I don't see, and it'll make itself clear down the road. But what I hadn't really thought of or considered is that they really kind of do the same thing when it comes to coaching. When you look at the turnover on Kyle Shanahan's staff over the years, which you're going to have, that's a good sign. That means you've been very successful. They just keep on finding new guys and churning out new guys. You've lost two defensive coordinators in the last 3 years, and they bring in Steve Wilks, who obviously comes with a track record and a resume.
And if I may, just to that point, both the guys that you lost did such a good job, they both got head coaching jobs.
Right.
So it's not like you lost some schlubs.
They came in and performed at a level where people are like, I want that guy running my organization. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, that's how good a find those guys were for Kyle Shanahan. Oh, yeah, and I forgot, they lost Fangio, too. And that's why they brought in Saleh. Fangio got a head coaching. So that's three defensive coordinators in a row that you brought in and lost two head coaching jobs, which just tells you how good a job that they did. But then when you look at the offensive side of things, and Kyle Shanahan is the mastermind. He's the architect of all that. But you still need people to go out and get the message through. Shanahan can't be everywhere all at once in terms of teaching this stuff and drilling this stuff into these guys. And I remember I got here just after Mike McDaniel was hired by the Dolphins last year to be their head coach, and they didn't name an offensive coordinator. They went with the run game coordinator and the pass game coordinator titles for a couple of guys. They didn't name and I went, that's kind of weird. And they also brought in Brian Griese, who I was just talking about, as a quarterback's coach. And I went, so you're not going to name an offensive coordinator and you're going to bring a guy out of the booth to be your quarterback's coach for a team that doesn't necessarily have the greatest quarterback situation. And as the season went on last year, Whitey, they had Trey Lance was plan A. He got hurt. Jimmy Garoppolo came in, performed at a high level. Brock Purdy came in after he got hurt, performed at a high level. I think you have to give a lot of that credit, yes, to Kyle Shanahan, but also to Brian Griese, and it speaks to what I'm talking about, that their secret weapon, yes, it is the talent, finding talent and developing talent from unlikely places, but they also seem to have an eye for filling out a coaching staff and refilling a coaching staff as they lose guys because they're so good at what they do.
Yeah, and Griese replaced Coach Scangarello. And to your point, you know, Griese hadn't been a coach before, right? And they bring him in at a very important time of development for some of the 49er quarterbacks and a very volatile time for their quarterback situation overall. So he's done a spectacular job. And you're right, the 49ers, it's why it's so interesting to me that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they have such a knack for talent, not just players, but coaches. And yet when it comes to quarterbacks, it seems like maybe he's got it figured out now, but it seems like Coach Shanahan has just had kind of a hard time with that most important position. But maybe they found their guy.
It hadn't dawned on me how good they are at this until I was reading that article today. And I was like, yeah, Brian Griese.
Yeah.
They pulled that guy out of the ESPN college football booth.
Some eyebrows were raised when he was hired.
And by the way, and handed over the guy they had traded a bunch of assets to move up to number three in the draft, and they're like, "Here, here's your project." You know, a guy they had a lot riding on in Trey Lance as the season started last year. They put him in the hands of Brian Griese and said, "Here you go, we trust you." And while Trey Lance didn't necessarily work out because of injury, every other quarterback that you gave him to work with after that performed at high enough a level, I think we can say, to keep the 49ers in contention. I see TC, he's been on hold for a little bit, wanting to talk some 49ers. Appreciate the patience, TC. What do you got, buddy? TC?
Rami.
Yes, sir.
Whitey, how you guys doing?
Good. Great.
How are you?
I'm all right. Just chiming in a little bit about the Niners.
What you got?
It's like this. You know, I say it all the time, man. It's like this. I know the whole Trey Lance, he came out, he worked on everything. I love him for that. You know what I'm saying? But it's like this. It's an honest truth. If Kyle is not giving him his proper chance, if the whole, like, they let him play, and then all of a sudden they're like, well, Brock Purdy, he's ahead of schedule. He's, no matter what, the starting quarterback. If I'm sitting down in that office, if I'm Lance and his agent, if I don't have a shot to be the guy from training camp until week one, like, legitimately be the guy, not I'm the guy for a game, I'm a guy for a preseason, and then Purdy's back, then trade me. Get me out of here because you guys are playing with me. You guys have been playing with me this whole time I've been here. I'm not being a second string. I'm not being a third string. I want to be the starting quarterback. If that's not happening, then get me out of town, please, because that's what it's seeming like to me.
Appreciate the call, TC. Turn off my mic when I meant to hang
keep
up
that
the
on
phone.
Generally,
I meant to hit the button to hang up the phone, and I hit the mic button to hang up my mic. Anyway, I think Trey Lance sees an opportunity still here in San Francisco, and obviously wants to take that opportunity and run with it. I think he also knows it's one more year, and if he doesn't get his opportunity here because Brock Purdy performs at a certain level, he'll go somewhere else and probably get a chance there. And Trey Lance says, like, this is where I want to be, which he might mean that, but he also wants to be a starting quarterback in this league, I'm sure. And once it dawns on him or sets in that it's not happening with the 49ers, then he'll start looking elsewhere, and his representatives will start looking elsewhere.
I think that's right, and I see it the same way TC does. But as you say, right now, if you're Trey Lance, what do you want? I want to play. Okay, you've got this chance now in front of you. Right now, you have to maximize this opportunity. You've got a legitimate shot, it appears, to at least show that you're a better quarterback than you've shown to this point. I think if he plays in this preseason and then he ends up, you know, being supplanted by Sam Darnold as a backup, then I think it is going to be for Trey Lance a point where he's going to demand to get out. And I know there's interest. The Titans have interest in him, and other teams are interested. But right now, he's going to give everything he can to being the best quarterback he can be right now. But if he ends up as the third quarterback, I think he is going to be demanding his way out of San Francisco.
I think he also maybe sees what we were just talking about, that Kyle Shanahan and his staff do a pretty good job of coaching up quarterbacks and teaching them what it takes to play quarterback at this level. And why not at least take another year under those guys' wing of learning the position and learning this league, especially when you've had as many setbacks and hiccups in the start of your career as Trey Lance has had.
You said this a couple days ago, I believe, and I was watching today I was watching some of the video of the OTAs and Trey Lance, and I think you said, you know, his delivery does look a little more crisp. Mm-hmm. And I said the same thing you did. You know, who knows? I played quarterback at a high level of Leo Vikings Pop Warner football, as you know. But that's why we got you here.
That's why you're here. It's that Pop Warner football experience. Yes.
You could see him working. Can you imagine how hard it is when you played football your whole life? He's young, but still. Yeah. And I'm a quarterback. I know how to throw the ball. Hey, we don't want you to do that way anymore, how hard that is. But you can see. I mean, it's much tighter. He's getting the ball out quicker.
It's more compact and tighter and coming over the
so
top a little bit
working
more.
On it. Yeah.
Yes, sir. And you're right. A guy deserves credit for that. Like, your trade is throwing the football, and you've been doing it one way your whole life.
Don't do it that way anymore.
Don't do it that way. You got to have an open mind to hear that and to work on that. You know what I mean? So credit to him for working on it. And yeah, I think there is a noticeable difference. If you've been watching football your whole life, you can see the difference in his delivery, and we'll see if it pays off for the 49ers or for somebody else. Right after this, what might the Kings do this offseason? Bobby Marks, ESPN front office analyst, in the callback.
Rami.
I'm going to light up these phone lines.
The phone is ringing, and we are checking to see who's on the line.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
News, gossip, a story.
Okay, who's the next victim?
It's the callback.
On Cattles and Rami.
Whitey in for Cattles for another 28 minutes.
I can handle that.
Cattles will be back on Tuesday after the Memorial Day weekend. We had Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, on the show earlier today. I didn't know until you brought it up in the interview. He interviewed to be the Kings assistant GM.
Mm-hmm. I think they might have hired him. I'm not sure he was interested in the job.
But we talked with Bobby about these Sacramento Kings, and I asked him just how many steps the Kings took from just 1 year ago.
Oh, man. I mean, I thought just getting into the play-in this year would have been a success.
Sure.
Right? I thought that would have been step one. It feels like they skipped it, and they didn't have to kind of give up the farm to do it here. And, you know, I think you see where Denver is right now, and that's certainly the gold standard, and I don't think there's any reason why this roster can't be there. Whether it be next year or a year after that. And then after that, it's a Western Conference that's got a lot of parity, that's really wide open. So, yeah, they made a tremendous amount of steps as far as I thought just the goal was to get in the play and get that taste of playing meaningful games here. But when you go to a seven-game series and you're up, you know 2-0 in that series, put yourself in that position. And now the hard part is, right now, this is the hard part. Mm-hmm. When you are kind of a targeted team and you're not going to sneak up on, and everybody's going to want to know kind of what's next here, and getting to the first round probably isn't going to be acceptable next year.
He mentioned the wide open West, and we've talked, Whitey, about it's maybe not as wide open as it may have looked to some of us early in the season, and we didn't quite know how good Denver was and how far ahead of the pack that they were. But that being said, after Denver, there's nobody else who I fear, or who I would automatically put ahead of the Kings if we were to, you know, stack the Western Conference next season. And quite frankly, I think as good as they are with the right moves, they can be caught by the Sacramento Kings. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
I see it the same way you do. Most of the other teams in the West that we have expectations of, there's something pulling them down, whether it's contract status or a situation like, you know, whatever's going on with Ja. But the Kings seem like, nope, they have the opportunities to continue to push this thing in the right direction.
I also asked him about, you know, it's money is going to determine a lot, but also the perception of the franchise is going to matter in terms of getting guys to come to Sacramento and play for Mike Brown. And I asked him, how much has that perception changed around the league?
I would say that Sacramento won't have any trouble having guys come in for draft workouts like they've had in the past. And I know they're picking in the 20s, and it's a lot different than picking at 4 and 5 here. And that was always the big thing. Like, nobody wanted to go to Sacramento and work out. And I don't think you have to worry about that. I think, yeah, it's, you know, this big market destination thing. I think it's certainly overblown. I think I look, and I didn't even really write about it. You know, their medical staff, you know, basically keeping this team on the court healthy. Yep. I mean, I think they missed the fewest games there. So, you know, that's a place that you're going to be taken care of, on the court, off the court here. I think, you know, hey, we know Mike's going to be here for a long time. I think that's all players want. The players don't want to go to situations where you're going to be changing a coach 2 years from now here. And I think how the league is set up here with this new collective bargaining agreement coming in, there's going to be more parity than we probably saw this year here. So there's no reason why it can't be a destination spot. As long as you win and you know you have a tremendous fan base, and this fan base has been through this behind them forever, through bad and good, and we saw this year what an advantage it was here. Players want to play for that. You know, like, you know, you can go live in Miami during the summer if you don't want to live in, you know, Northern California in June, July, and in August here. And so I think it is a destination spot just based on when you win games, players want to go there.
Destination? Why is Sacramento a destination for NBA players? Could you see it?
A semi-destination, if that makes sense. But I think that's, you know, quite an accomplishment from given what where they used to be, where nobody wanted to come here.
Yeah, that's it's come a long way in terms of making this a place guys would want to play. And finally, Whitey, you asked our guest, Bobby Marks, who joined us on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline, Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop, in your never-ending quest to trade the rights to Sasha Vezenkov and never see him in a Kings uniform, just what is his value around the league to other teams?
Huge, because it's, you know, it's a little bit different, you know, certainly from a free agent perspective, as far as a guy coming in and then, you know, certainly have him on a control, either a controllable contract, especially how some of these exceptions are going to work in the CBA, or maybe you use, you know, some of your, you know, non-taxman level, you can go out and do that here. And it's got a lot of tremendous value. I mean, it's basically an additional draft pick, and it's a guy that's got a ton of experience that can come in, I think, and can play for you right now. Or if you're, as you said, if you're looking to flip him for something else, if that's what Sacramento wants to do.
It depends what they'd flip him for, Whitey.
Absolutely, 100%.
When we were talking about it, and I said I think he has more value to the Kings than he would on the market, I also put the disclaimer on it that I don't know anything about NBA salary caps and that whole puzzle and how it goes together. He threw in some of the stuff that would factor into that, the small contract, the mid-level exception, getting basically a draft pick. So his value does seem higher than maybe what I thought it was when we had that discussion a couple days ago. But to me, still, and again, like I said, it depends what you get for him and what are you going to package with him to get a quality player over. I said to JJ on Monday before you jumped in the co-host chair, you look at Sasha Vezenkov, and I think you might be getting, now not top four, top five, I'm not saying that, but a lottery quality type of rookie player. And those just don't come along all that often. And I don't know that you're going to get somebody better than that now, but also somebody to be a part of this thing right for the future in any sort of trade.
Yeah, just to clarify, I'm not saying you need to get rid of this guy. I'm saying that he has value. So if you could spin him off for something that would more directly impact your real needs, you'd have to consider it. That's all I'm really saying about that. As far as his value, it really hinges on something that's unknowable, and that is what the other teams around the league think of him. How much do they want him? That's what determines value.
That's the callback. Bobby Marks, NBA ESPN front office insider, was our guest on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Going to wrap it up on before a long weekend with In Other News. That's coming up next right here on Cattles and Rockets.
Did you catch all the week's headlines?
Check the headlines. Check the headlines. Hit the headlines.
Let the fellas fill you in on this week's In Other News.
In Other News, where we give you some of the weird, wild, wacky stories from around the world of sports.
Wild and the wacky.
And elsewhere, including the world of Jeopardy. You watch Jeopardy, Whitey?
What ever? Is? Yes, I do.
Okay. There was a clue in the category Shakespeare's characters earlier this week. And the clue was both of the names of these two lovers in a Shakespeare play come from Latin words for blessed. Do you know the question is the answer to that clue? Now, the answer is Beatrice and Benedict. Beatrice and Benedict is the answer. But one contestant, it was, let me see here, Ben Chan from Green Bay, Wisconsin. He wrote down Beatrice and Benedict.
That's wrong.
Off by one letter.
That's wrong.
And not only did he not win, he had a 10-day winning streak ended by one letter on Jeopardy because he misspelled one of the characters' names. That's tough.
He got it wrong.
I mean, technically,
yes.
You get
it right or you get it wrong.
The judges couldn't let one letter slide.
No!
The judges just couldn't let just one letter slide.
No.
Fair enough. Okay, I guess the rules is the rules, but I don't know. That seems kind of, to end a 10-day run on one letter seems kind of tough to me.
Hey, let me know if you ever want to do this. I've done this at a number of stations, a little game called Jeopardy, which is like Jeopardy with sports questions.
Ooh.
We have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I almost asked if you wanted to do it today.
Oh, definitely.
But anytime, just let me know if you guys want to do
that. We're probably going to have to backfill this last segment. So you just keep that in your back pocket, Whitey.
Oh, no, I got something in my back pocket. Don't worry, Simone. Simone, do you have a story for In Other News this week?
No. I was just going to share that, you know, my Vanderpump Rules did really well as far as their ratings were going.
Of course it did.
There was an incredible version I did want to let the people know, available on Peacock, where it's uncensored. So that's really nice.
Whitey
and extended.
Is running to his Peacock app right now.
So,
the uncensored
Vanderpump
Rules.
It's fun to watch them really
segment.
Go at it that way. So that's just my little in other news.
That guy is always crying. The one dude, right? The Sandoval,
yes.
In Scandoval.
They're crocodile tears. Nothing is coming out.
Really?
No,
you think
no.
It's all an act, huh?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
JJ, anything in other news today? Whitey, or should I just move on to the other thing that I had loaded up for this segment real quick? Jay?
Yeah, I have something,
okay.
But I kind of like the other thing that you're getting ready to jump on, so I'm a veto mine, too, because
okay.
I have a few things to talk about this here.
Let's jump right into it. Scottie Pippen was on Stacey King's podcast.
Stacey, who I just texted a couple days ago. Stacey, nice. you better respond to me, homie.
Especially after this.
Yeah.
He was on Stacey King's podcast, and the subject of LeBron versus MJ came up. Have you seen this or read
no.
these quotes? Why do you haven't? Okay. And he's said before he thinks LeBron is the greatest of all time and has surpassed Michael Jordan, but said so more strongly today with Stacey King.
LeBron will be the greatest statistical guy to ever play the game of basketball. And there's no comparison to him. None. So does that make him the greatest player to ever play the game? I'll leave that out for debating because I don't believe that there's a great player because our game is a team game and one player can't do it. Like, I seen Michael Jordan play before I came to play with the Bulls. You guys seen him play. He was a horrible player. He was horrible to play with. He was all one-on-one. He's shooting bad shots. And all of a sudden, we become a team and we start winning. Everybody forgot who he was.
A horrible player. He described Michael Jordan as before he came to the Chicago Bulls. This
right.
is just sad. Is if I don't know if everybody, I mean, I do see the humor in it, and Twitter is having a great time with
yeah,
it today.
Field,
and I've laughed at plenty of those tweets, but ultimately this thing is just sad. The way that this has deteriorated between Scottie and Michael, and there's something personal there, and maybe even more personal there now that Michael Jordan's son is dating Scottie Pippen's
ding, 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 ding,
ding. Ex-wife. That might have thrown a little bit more gas on the flames.
Think?
Right, didn't help
of that relationship. Yeah, I'm certain it didn't help. But man, you just come off like there would be a way for Scottie to go on this campaign of saying LeBron is the GOAT and he'd take him over Michael. There'd be a way to do that more effectively. You just come off as a bitter old man when you do it and frame it the way that Scottie Pippen just did to say. I mean, you look foolish. When Michael Jordan was a terrible player, did those
horrible
words
player, yeah.
horrible player? Did those words just leave your lips, Scottie Pippen? That really, he's a horrible player before you got to Chicago. Stop, man. Just stop this insanity. Stop. It's sad is what it is between these two guys.
Hasn't
at this point.
He, as far as who's the better player, hasn't Scottie a little bit gone back and forth? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that he was like, oh, he says LeBron's better. Then I thought there was a period where he was suggesting, no, Michael was better. And when JJ played the cut, to me, it sounded like he was kind of trying to have it both ways. But, you know, then he clearly comes down pro LeBron. It is sad he never got over whatever resentment he had for Michael when he played there. Remember when Michael left the first year Michael was gone and they were running a play against the Knicks and Phil Jackson wanted Scottie Pippen to be the decoy, so he'd give the ball to Kukoc and Scottie Pippen's like, I'm not going in the game then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
And
you don't blame him?
I don't blame him. Give me he wouldn't have done it to Jordan.
I mean, Jordan was not by design, but Jordan was the decoy before.
I get it.
Where he passed it off
Mm-mm.
to Paxson or Kerr or somebody else.
But he passed,
else. Sure.
He passed it
yes.
off to Steve Kerr
yes.
or John Paxson. Nah, I'm not no decoy.
I get
Hand
it.
Hand me the rock.
But, Jay, this bitterness, it's
yeah.
ugly and it's sad
it
between
is.
These two guys.
You know what's interesting for me is I'm not old enough to have seen Mike play without Scottie.
Sure.
And so for me, because you guys are older than me, I always, you know, fall back and allow you guys to speak on it. But there's a truth to that. And this is my thing. Jordan is not untouchable. Like, Jordan fans make Jordan untouchable. He can't be. He's the Teflon Don.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, for me, Jordan is a lot bigger because what he's done off the court compared to what he's done on the court. It sounds crazy.
No,
I understand.
I think there's something to that.
But I'll argue to death the fact that his brand has put him over the top And especially in my type of community where mm-hmm. I come from, where we cared more or less about what was on our feet or on our back than him playing. Right. And so, well, let me say for some people, mm-hmm. because I know a lot of people are going, Jay, you crazy. It's Michael Jordan. I get it. But Jordan has a mystique about him that if you say anything wrong about him, and I think that's what Isaiah Thomas is kind of been saying, and certain people, you know, the detractors of Michael Jordan, where it's like, okay, this dude's not, you know, the Teflon Don.
He's not
like,
God.
He's not God, yeah, he's right. Not he can't be touched. Right. And so that's my thing, and this is what I take it even a step further is I know Scotty mad. Look, anybody who's dating my ex-wife, and it is not only you but your son, mm-hmm. it's not even you but your son is dating my ex-wife. Mm-hmm. That's totally off limits. That's the killer of the bro code, right? He's got to have an opinion that's weighed, though, because he played with Michael Jordan from the top to the bottom just about.
And if his breakdown, his analysis and answering that question, Jay, was measured,
okay,
then his words would carry more weight with me. To say Michael Jordan is horrible,
I think
is where you lose credibility.
I agree with what you're saying.
And it just comes off as bitterness. Yes. And I don't know what you actually believe and how much of this is just your bitterness speaking.
It's the bitterness for sure. 100%. I'm with you. I just think it's a conversation, and Whitey touched on it. I think he's been calculated and measured in certain points and times throughout this discussion. And today, it's the viral moment. Like, dude's been horrible. He chose a different word today, whatever. Who knows how he was feeling today. He's not horrible. But there's an opinion based upon who he is that we have to pay attention to. And if he is saying, if Scottie Pippen, who went through thick as thieves with Jordan, mm-hmm. is saying, he might not be the greatest. I mean, if just take a step back to it.
Sure. Why did you have something?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, of course.
Real quick. Pippen joined the NBA in 1987. 1986, April 20th, 1986, Michael Jordan scored 63 points in a playoff game against the Celtics. That's the most points anyone scored in an NBA playoff game. And that was before Scottie got
lost,
there.
As the haters will point out, they didn't lose true. That basketball.
I will say this, no one cares now.
You took the loss.
To the point you made, if I understood you correctly, when Michael Jordan left the Bulls, you know, you'd figure he's the greatest player ever. They must have collapsed, right? First time he left, I think they won 55 games.
And Scottie should have been the MVP that year.
Without him.
But I will also say this. There's a reason why Scottie, I don't know if you guys remember this viral moment, but Scottie putting his Jordan up to the camera
Truth.
And pointing at it and uh-huh. saying, come back.
Uh-huh.
He did that for a reason, because he knew what Michael brought to that team.
Yeah.
And he knew
they
weren't winning championships without MJ.
See, I look at it differently. He told Nike, I need my own shoe, which you wind up getting the next year. He got it the next year. See what I'm saying? I could argue it, too.
Our thanks to our guest today, Bobby Marks, who you heard in the callback, ESPN front office analyst, as well as Matt Kawahara, who gave us the latest on the A's and their potential move to Las Vegas from the San Francisco Chronicle. If you missed either of those or anything on today's show, check them out at SacktownSports.com, the app, or YouTube.com/SacktownSports. Whitey, thanks again sitting in for Nick.
Very much.
Is back Tuesday. For Jay, Simone, Rami saying enjoy the long weekend and be safe out there, Sacramento. We'll talk to you Tuesday starting at 2.